all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And we are back on a Monday morning. It's April 10th. This is the second hour of Up North News Radio, and coming up this hour, a victory lap for moms. The state Supreme Court come August is going to be controlled by progressives for the first time in 15 years, thanks in large part to moms and their allies who spread the word that nothing gets better until you pursue a much higher level of civic engagement and community organizing. So we'll talk to Nicole Slavin and Aaron Phillips of Motherhood for Good about continuing that momentum into areas like the way a judge has tried to politicize an important women's medication. And we're going to talk to Kristen Lyerly about that as well in just a sec. But we're also going to have at the end of the hour, Terry Bell with three things that you should know to start the week. And a reminder, as always, that if you want to reach us and talk about what's on your mind, it's 844-967-2789. The Brewers were 6-1 winners yesterday over the St. Louis Cardinals and took 2 out of 3 from the Cards. And now they are on their way to Arizona to begin a 10-game road trip starting tonight in Arizona, 3 in Arizona, 4 in San Diego, then 3 more in Seattle. So they've got a long road ahead of them. The Bucks wrapped up the regular season by losing to Toronto 121-105 in a game that meant absolutely nothing. They are the number one seed. They will play the number 8 seed in the NBA playoffs, but we won't know who that is until the play-in tournament. Dr. Lyerly was at the Bucks game on Friday. How'd that go?
I don't think it's fair to say the game means absolutely nothing, because the game on Friday meant absolutely nothing as well. And we got to see all the players who we don't usually get to see play and what their talent level is like and what kind of enthusiasm they have. And of course, Giannis was in the corner because he can't not be on the court, just being like the world's greatest dad coach. It was a really different kind of Bucks game, and they lost, but it didn't matter because it was still really cool to see all of these different people. I don't know. I really loved it. I loved it as much as I would have loved seeing the top 6 guys out there.
I like how you started off by saying that I was wrong to say that, you know, the game meant nothing. And then you finished your remarks by saying that they lost, but it didn't matter. That's my point, is that it didn't matter from the standpoint of the standings and the playoff, you know, seedings. In that way, it was meaningless and didn't matter. Didn't mean that, like I told you before you went there on Friday morning, the environment, mm-hmm. being down there, to be there in the Deer District and everything. I haven't been down there for a game yet. I can't wait. It sounds like a lot of fun.
It was so much fun. And the games are so fast paced that as soon as something starts to get like not interesting, something else happens. And I'm not talking about minutes. I'm talking about seconds. So they had one of those game breaks where they brought somebody out on the court and he had to make a layup and a free throw and a 3-point shot. And he made this like unbelievable half point or half court shot at the very end and won $10,000. And it was all so unexpected that the crowd was just like, why? It was so much fun. So it's not just about the game. It's about the whole thing. And we had all these great conversations with the people sitting around us. The brat cannon was out. They were shooting brats into the audience. I mean, it's just one thing after another that just makes it truly an event. It's so much more than a game.
And actually, somebody I know posted from the game about the brat cabin, brat cannon. Brat cabin is where I met my wife. It's a bar on Water Street in Eau Claire. The brat cannon. It actually fires wrapped up warm brats into the stands, and somebody was showing it off on their social media posts. And
my next door guy got one, and he didn't know what to do with it because it's wrapped up so nice. And he was just looking at. They never actually took the brat out of the brat cannon case.
What are you gonna put it on your put it on your mantle and go, look, I won this thing. Doesn't smell good, but you know, it's over time. That can't work. I worry about that because I once missed a t-shirt that was fired by a t-shirt cannon. And, you know, again, they wind it up really tight and they throw it. And I had my hand up and it hit the top of my finger, you know, just so, and then came off it. And you know what happened, you know, when you jam your finger like that, and that those things fall with some velocity. Who thought a soft t-shirt, you know, could have that kind of speed, but apparently mass, force, acceleration. I don't know. Aaron's the scientist here. He has something to, you've probably studied this stuff, right? Or are you going to tell us you shirt?
Sorry, what was that? I hit the wrong button.
Aaron Zommers, everybody, showing us exactly the way to treat it when Pat and Kristen are talking about sports.
Wait, this, I don't think this is about Aaron. I think this is about Pat getting injured by a flying t-shirt.
I got injured by a flying t-shirt. Because the guy could, look, I understand you don't want to fire it directly at somebody, so you fire it up in the air. But the launch angle, I mean, this thing, this was in the Metrodome, if I'm not mistaken, almost hit the roof. I mean, it's coming down with some velocity, much like a foul ball. You can take a foul ball, you know, the same way. But yeah, it hits you right on the tip of the finger. And, you know, the guy I was at the game with ended up getting it. And of course, you know, kept it. It's like, I got this. Like, well, I got the assist, kind of.
So you can borrow
there
it
goes my
other
concert
week.
Pianist career. What's that, Aaron?
You can borrow the shirt every other weekend.
Yeah, that's it. We'll share custody of the shirt. Sounds like a lot of fun. Somewhere in this segment, we were going to talk about the dueling federal judges' rulings on mifepristone, one of the abortion medications that is essential for much more than, you know, some kind of elective abortion. And so we're going to talk more about that with Dr. Lyerly, who is an OBGYN, for those of you who either have completely forgotten, have lived in a cave, or are just joining us. So we'll take a break. We'll get the updated forecast from Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. And then we will talk about this very, shall we say, anticipated ruling by a Trump-appointed judge. And meanwhile, another federal judge, like practically minutes later, said not so fast. And so now we, meaning the legal system, the FDA, women, their doctors, are all in some kind of legal limbo right now. And Dr. Lyerly will explain that to us after we get a weather check. And that's coming up right after this break. If you want the Up North News newsletter, go to upnorthnewswi.com. Look for newsletter in the top banner and click there. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's a Monday morning, April 10th, Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be joining us right after we get a weather check, and we will be talking about the dueling rulings by federal judges on the abortion pill mifepristone, which has impacts far beyond what I think most people would assume when it comes to that. And it's, of course, not the first time that this has happened where federal judges have issued conflicted rulings and the Supreme Court has had to step in. But given this current makeup of the Supreme Court, a lot of folks are left wondering how this one is going to turn out. Before we get to that, however, we'll turn to meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology to tell us about what appears to be a very lovely spring week ahead of us. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Hope you had a good holiday weekend.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, and it looks like a pretty decent week, as you mentioned. Definitely going to feel a lot more like spring here this week. A short and sweet forecast, we're looking at mid to low 70s from Wisconsin Rapids through the southern parts of the state, with skies becoming mostly sunny and already sunny in the west around Amory and Baldwin, highs in the mid to upper 60s over there. Overall, above average for everyone today as Amory over to Wausau, Oshkosh, over to Richland Center, and down to Milwaukee. Basically, they all should be around the mid 50s, so decent amount above average here for today. Sunny and warmer across the state for the next couple of days as the warm front continues, pushes through, highs in the upper 70s, around 80 for everyone. Then a high pressure system settles in briefly for Thursday with not much movement as far as the temperatures are concerned, and still expecting to see sunny skies as well. Then a potential for a chance for rain for parts of the state, Richland Center up to Wausau and over to the west here by Friday.
This is so nice. It really is. We are so ready for this, Jennifer. Thank you so much for a wonderful forecast to start the week.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. Kristen Lyerly still with us. And let's turn to the fight over mifepristone, which shouldn't be a fight. The FDA approved it a very long time ago, Kristen. But again, let's do a little bit of the background. What is mifepristone? What all is it used for? And then we'll get into how this ever fell into the courts.
Mifepristone is a safe, effective, FDA-approved medication that is still available. We still have access to it. It's been around for over two decades. It's been FDA-approved for over two decades. It's been around for a lot longer than that. And actually, it's been used in Europe continuously for much longer than that. And there's no fight over this in Europe. or in other parts of the country or in other parts of the world. I mean, mifepristone is one of two medications that we use for abortion care, but also importantly, managing miscarriages. It's a progesterone receptor blocker. It starts the process. And then the second medication is misoprostol that actually causes cervical softening and uterine contractions. So all those fancy doctor words to say that when someone suffered a miscarriage, these are the medications that we can use to help them complete that miscarriage and get the treatment that they need. And here in Wisconsin, that's what's at risk if mifepristone becomes less available than it already is.
Now, normally I wouldn't ask you about the legal angle of all this, but simply because you have probably been following that part of it as well. Can you talk a bit about why it is that a court would be taking up the Food and Drug Administration approval of this medication 23 years ago?
It doesn't make any sense at all, Pat. It really doesn't. So it's completely political. This is a Trump-appointed judge in an area where the court doesn't have the standard double check for whatever reason. That's something I don't understand because I'm not a legal expert. But this judge, this area, they were very specifically chosen to take up this case. You know, this is an FDA-approved medication. This has never happened before. So what is the precedent that we're setting if a single judge who has no medical training, who has no background or experience in this realm, can overturn over two decades of science and evidence and experience with a medication that is widely used? It just defies understanding. And like I said, it sets a really dangerous precedent.
Yeah, this is a judge that has written critically previously about Roe v. Wade. It is the first time that a court has ordered a drug's approval to be revoked over the objection of the FDA. And as the New York Times notes, it could open the door to legal challenges against vaccines, the morning after pill, any medication that's at the center of a controversial issue, and frankly, just undermines the confidence in science and all of the testing that is done, which is not to say that every drug that is approved isn't later found to have some issues. That certainly has happened over time. That's not the case here.
Right. There's a process for that. But that hasn't happened with this medication. This medication is actually as safe as Tylenol or ibuprofen. It is safer than Viagra. Mifepristone is a safe medication, and there is no medical reason why it should lose its FDA approval. This is entirely political.
Now, it is noted in some of the reaction from this that the judge's personal views on abortion are apparently seen throughout the language of the ruling. According to one legal expert, this does not read like a judicial opinion. It reads like an activist complaint. There are several ways that this may actually weaken his case by showing a lack of credibility in the sense that most of the FDA decisions are very carefully backed by evidence. And so it raises this point. Again, you and I aren't legal experts on this, but it's worth noting that sometimes, as we're finding out with Brian Hagedorn, a conservative justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it could be that the conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court will actually look at this and say courts should not be legislating from the bench and that there is a process. There is an FDA process and that you have to stick with that. So that is the optimistic side, I guess, of where this case could come down, right?
We certainly hope that that's where this case ends up coming down. You know, this is such a travesty. It's for people who need this kind of treatment, this kind of medication. A miscarriage can be managed with just one of these medicines, but that makes it much less effective, which means that people who are already suffering from a miscarriage now may need additional care, an additional procedure, additional time away from work, additional cost. That's not healthcare. It's just not fair.
But is it legal? Is it legal?
It's not legal, yeah. But it's not fair. I just can't even, like, I have to sit in an exam room with my patients who are suffering and explain this to them. And that's the reason that I got involved with politics from the beginning, because I really can't look my patients in the eye and say, sorry, there's some arbitrary reason that you can't have this medication or that we can't give you the best possible treatment because you live in Wisconsin, because you are a woman. You know, like, I can't do that. That's why I have to fight for it on a different level.
Well, and especially when you consider that in Wisconsin, you know, there have been moves by the Biden administration to try to make mifepristone available despite what, you know, some state laws say. But Wisconsin's abortion ban right now means that there's no way that mifepristone can be legal in the state, right?
Well, mifepristone is legal in the state. We just can't use it for abortion care, but we use it all the time for managing miscarriages. And we even use it in some situations for second trimester inductions. So, I mean, it's here and it actually has, like you said, Pat, recently become more available, which was amazing because it was complicated to get before. So for us to get access to a medication that we know is safe and effective, that serves our patients and gives us better outcomes and makes healthcare more accessible, less expensive for our patients, that to us was a giant win. And now we're taking this incredible step back. It's just, it's so wrong. I don't even have the words, Pat. I don't even have the words.
it's very understandable, but you know, we will certainly see some kind of movement on this after August 1st. And by the way, let's talk for a second here about the interval between, you know, an election and when people take office, because the most glaring example of our lifetime will be the January 6th riots, because we go so long between election day in November and January 20th when a new president takes office. I mean, we're not doing horse and buggy anymore. We're not doing, you know, 3/4 of the Congress is planting crops or something. And so we have this long delay. And the same goes with a state Supreme Court race. I mean, the voters know which direction they want the court to go in. They've made a choice. And yet we're left here waiting 4 months now for something to happen. It's a system that could use some upgrades.
We can't stand it. We have short attention spans. We need instant gratification.
Well, it's more than that. I mean, is it realistic, you know, to do that? Could you do it the next day? No, of course there should be some kind of a transition, but whether it should be a 4 month transition, I think that's something that you could debate. Again, if you wanted to debate reform, if you wanted to debate, you know, making things a little easier, if you wanted to debate solving problems. And that takes me to our next subject here. And this is a tweet by State Representative Robin Vining from the Wauwatosa area. This was a tweet that she put up on Saturday. And so I'm going to read through this whole thing and then get your reaction. I've been asked to hold this Wednesday at 10 a.m. for an Assembly Committee on Health hearing. Representative Vining says, we have not heard a bill in the Health Committee this year, not for 3.5 months, not one bill, nothing. But now we've been given a hold for 10 a.m. Wednesday with no formal notice, no bills. I'm refreshing email over and over again. How can we prepare for a hearing if we don't know the bill? Is that the point? Are they holding the bills till the last second? Maybe it's nothing, but maybe it's meant to be a last minute surprise so that Democrats can't prepare. After all, there's Assembly floor votes scheduled for April 18th. Is this a quick turnaround on something terrible? Or is it simply a hearing to pass something forward to help people? I hope it's the latter, but I'm preparing for the worst. Either way, this is not a healthy democratic process. And this is far from the first time Republicans have done this, Kristen, since they took control of the legislature.
I think what you just said, this is not a healthy democratic process. Their goal is not actually to solve problems here. Their goal is to play politics and see how one side can look better than the other side. But we've got all of these things that are happening right now. And Robin Vining is a great example of a representative who truly represents. She's in a tough district and she is out there talking to people, trying to bring their voices forward. And the overall body is suppressing the voices of her constituents. This is a dysfunctional government, and it is time that we change it.
Oh, this is for somebody in a purple district like her to put her values out there front and center and lead with them and say, look, I will stand before the voters, and if I falter, I falter. That's more guts than, you know, a lot of people from purple districts in legislatures, in the House of Representatives, purple states in the Senate, you know, have proven themselves to be rather reticent, shall we say, to take a stand on something. And Robin Vining is one who does not hesitate to say, look, this is what I stand for. And good on her for waving a red flag here and saying the Assembly Health Committee still hasn't put out official notice, still hasn't told us what bill, this is as of Saturday, and what are they waiting for? It's not right, and I hope that the Representative Vining will keep us updated on this.
And I hope that more people send up these red flags to let us know that this is not working for us, something needs to change. It's by using our voices that we're going to create this change.
We will talk next with Aaron Phillips and Nicole Slavin from Motherhood for Good. They worked so hard on this election and want to talk about staying involved now that the election is passed. All part of a Monday morning here on Up North News Radio. You can find out what we do at our website, upnorthnewswi.com, or on social media. Look for Up North News WI. Don't forget.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
All right, Motherhood Monday. That's not going away just because the election is done. So we have Nicole Slavin and Aaron Phillips from Motherhood for Good. Their friend Kristen Lyerly sticking around with us as well. Nicole, Aaron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. How are you, Pat?
Doing great. Thanks, Nicole. Same with you.
Yeah, doing great. Right, good. Bright, sunny, fun, well, kind of cloudy, but you know, hey, we'll make it work.
The sun is shining across Wisconsin, no matter what, based on what finally happened last week. And so look, Kristen and I have talked about some of the challenges that are ahead, and we will talk about the challenges that are still ahead, but let's take that victory lap. You guys have earned that. You guys have worked your hearts out. For moms who were not expecting to be involved at this level politically, you got involved, and so you've earned this. Why did this happen? Talk about who showed up thanks to the work and you and many other people did.
Everybody showed up. Record turnout numbers, right? Nicole, I know we're going to talk about the youth vote. UW campuses had record turnout. You know, no surprise that Dane County showed up in mass, but Dane County blew its own records out of the water for record voter turnout. Just incredible, incredible. People recognize the importance of what was going on in this race, and they showed up.
How about in the Wow counties and the Bow counties, Nicole? You want to talk about those?
Sure. So I'm in the Green Bay area. I'll tell you, I was so excited as the returns were coming in, and I'm like, yay, and watching, you know, it was clear she was ahead, and I was like checking Brown County and kind of going, okay, someday we're moving the needle a little. And then as the night went on, all of a sudden it flipped to know from Door County all the way down through Oshkosh that it all went for Janet. Just really, really proved to me that we can do it, right? And like, I don't know. It's just such a huge thing. Kristen probably is nodding her head as well, listening to me, because I know we know those people are there. We're interacting with them every day. They care, but they showed up. They voted. It was just huge. Knowing the Wow counties as well, Washington, Ozaukee, Waukesha, some areas flipped that like nobody thought it was one of those things where maybe down the road or hey, you know, maybe in a presidential election, but to see it turn in a spring election, it really just proves that there are more of us and common sense prevails.
I'm going to say it again with astonishment. The city of Waukesha. Yeah. Janet Protasiewicz won the city of Waukesha. And so, and by the way, for folks who are not up to speed on all of our shorthand, of course, like she said, the Wow counties, Washington, Ozaukee, Waukesha, all around Milwaukee County, the Bow counties, Brown, Outagamie, Winnebago, Kristen, you're up in that neck of the woods, Door County, 57%. I mean, mm-hmm. You're helping something happen there.
Yeah, well, Door County is.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Go ahead, Kristen. Oh, I was just going to say a 57%. I mean, that margin is huge. And for people who maybe don't, you know what kinds of margins could be considered a landslide in Wisconsin, or for people who don't live in Wisconsin, like that margin is astounding. So it's not just a win. It's like a big win.
Door County is really evolving. And I have to say, it's for the same reason that the work that you do is so important. You are giving people a voice and helping people who have an opinion and they feel strongly about things, but you're helping to elevate that and to demonstrate to them that it is important to go to the polls and it is important to have these conversations. That's the thing that turned this election around. And that's the thing that's going to continue to move Wisconsin forward.
Yes. I see what you did there. Erin, talk about those conversations and growing the membership and getting people more comfortable with having conversations about politics and about a spring election.
Yeah, well, so much of what we're always trying to do, right, is make politics and having conversations about political issues feel as normal as we think they should be, right? We have this sort of motto, parenting includes politics. So that was so much of our personal motivations in getting involved, right? We have families. We realized that the intersection of where political issues were impacting our families was just hitting too close to home. And we wanted to do something about it. I think for so many people, right, it's still a little, they feel a little nervous talking about politics, or you'll hear people say like, oh, well, I don't talk to my family about politics. And we're trying to change that and just make talking about these issues part of daily conversation so that it's not uncomfortable to talk to your friends or your family or your kids, you know, their friends, parents. Just normalize it. Because the more we talk about this, the more other people are going to talk about this, the more we're all suddenly talking about it. And then it's more comfortable to not only discuss it, but get yourselves out there and get involved, whether it's just by showing up to vote or by actually working in your community as well to make this sort of relational change.
And Nicole, it's not just the personal conversations, but social media as well, especially on Instagram for you guys, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm sure that as these weeks and months have gone, you know, well past November and into this campaign, you all have gotten even more comfortable and creative with how you communicate through social media.
Yeah, that's exactly it. One of the main tenets, as Erin was saying, is, you know, parenting is political. And it's meeting those parents, meeting those moms where they are. We're all busy. We all have, you know, full-time jobs. And we do this, you know, when we have time. And that was a lot of it, of how do we meet everyone where they're at? And then give them, first of all, easy to understand, of like, what's actually happening here? What does this mean when something happens in the news? But then more importantly, what can you do about it? So having these simple action items that here's what you can go do. Social media has really helped with that. And I think what we really have noticed or saw grow is just the sharing of it, posting, reposting, that you have your own group of people, your own town square, so to speak, of people that you can influence and help share these ideas with. So that was a lot of what we've seen really grow and happen naturally, and super exciting to see. And also sharing with other groups, right? Of we're all out there just doing our best.
I loved one of the videos that Kate put out there talking about making it relevant and creative. She made a video about gerrymandering using her child's chalkboard and like dinosaurs. It was so like cute and entertaining and really helpful. And I'm sure it reached an audience that otherwise it may not have reached. But I want to pivot a little. Oh, so go ahead,
Erin. I was just going to say, it's hard to get people excited to talk about gerrymandering, right? Right. And maybe some people, you know, are still learning, like, what does that even mean? Because what is that word? And so that is like a perfect example of this, you know, brilliance that Kate brought to the table. Make it super accessible, inform people, because knowledge is, I mean, so many people feel like they don't know what some of these issues are, and that keeps them from talking about it. So making it really bite-sized and really fun, you know, if a gerrymandering video can go viral, then we're doing something right.
Yes. And the more, like you were saying, Nicole, the more we talk about these things, the more comfortable they get and the more they become part of our common conversations. I don't know how many of you talked about this over Easter lunch or dinner or over the weekend, but we definitely talked about it as we were eating our ham.
Definitely. And I think that's a lot of it, right? It's just bringing this into those daily conversations. It doesn't have to wait for an election. It's issues we're facing all day, every day. And it doesn't have to be this scary, insurmountable, taboo thing to talk about. It affects everything. I think what happened right after the election and still celebrating, and it's wonderful what happened in Tennessee and then also with the medication abortion rulings. It just goes to prove that you're never done educating, right? Like there's always something new out there and we're all faced with it. So how do we best meet everyone where they're at to help understand what's happening? And then more importantly, what can we do about it? Because it affects all of us. And you'd much rather be on the proactive side than the reactive side when these kinds of things happen.
And so you do have to stay involved long after an election. Because again, the enemy has been complacency or apathy or just a lack of, you get to the election and go, well, I don't really know much about that issue or those candidates. And more folks have figured out that civic engagement and public information is a 365 day a year job. So I would imagine, Nicole, that the dueling court rulings on Friday about mifepristone probably give you a natural opening to talking to your members and having them talk to their friends about the reason to stay up on these issues and keep informing more people about them.
You're exactly right. And I think a lot of it is, it seems like, well, what all's happening? I missed it 2 months ago or, 6 months ago when the first part of this story happened. Now it just feels insurmountable. No, it's a real easy, simple way to just say, what are the facts? Like, what's happening here? In fact, Kristen was kind enough to do a short video for us earlier this year, just breaking down what mifepristone is and you know, what's at stake here. So we're always doing those building blocks along the way. I'm going to hand it over to Erin. She did a really great video this weekend, just talking about what's at stake and what the dueling court rulings are have up in the air for the entire country.
What was that about, Erin?
I'm an attorney. And so that when possible, though I'm not like a repro rights attorney or anything, but when possible, when the question at hand is what's going on with these legal matters, I mean, talk about a sort of area that's like very esoteric and maybe difficult for people who aren't in the legal field to like know what these terms are. Like we're talking about injunctions and stays and like, what are those? So Kate and I worked together to put out a video again on our social media, just breaking down like what happened, what is the case about, what happened in the Texas case, what happened in the Washington case, where do these go from here? You know, with something like this, our action item of, well, what can we do? Those are limited, right? Like right this second, because they're in the hands of these courts, but we can get informed. And so again, like breaking it down really simply, here's what went on, here's what we're looking to next, here's what we should pay attention to. These are this sort of empowering information just to, like Nicole is saying, make sure it doesn't feel insurmountable to anybody who's maybe hasn't been following or isn't understanding what these things are about. Just making it easy for them to engage, and hopefully then make them want to stay engaged and engage others down the road.
I really appreciate the angle that you take with Motherhood for Good. I mean, let's go back for just a minute. You all got together over the U.S. Senate race. Mm-hmm. And then when that was over, you turned your attention to what was happening in the spring and recognized that this is about moms. This is about pooling our talents together and using our voices to make a difference in a way that we feel comfortable. And now here you are recognizing like what happened in Tennessee, what's going on with the mifepristone issue. These are huge, very ugly issues, yet you are using your unique creative voices to do this in a very appealing, optimistic way. Nicole, can you talk a little bit about how you take that angle and that perspective and just where you go from here with that?
Absolutely. I think there's enough negative all the time out there. And that's not to say some of these issues aren't, you know, not happy. They are not good issues. But I think what it comes down to is the power that each of us have, and there's positivity in that power. We just did it. Like I still look around, you know, in Green Bay, like we flipped this. This is like, how do we keep this and grow this? So for us, it's that. It's building off of, we already proved this. We can do this. We're getting more people to vote, and we're getting more people involved in the process. And for me, that's the definition of optimism. And that's what we're out here doing every day. It's super exciting. And I think just watching the group grow and watching more and more people kind of meet us where we are and join on this fun journey. That's what it's all about.
And really, it's about
encountering all of that fear and misinformation that's been floating around out there for so long.
Well, to a degree, also staying on offense. Yeah.
Exactly.
And Aaron, what's the term you guys use? It's about storming the castles.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I don't remember when it came up, but in a group chat, Nicole said, okay, let's go storm that castle, which is, of course, you know, a reference to the incredible Princess Bride. But it's become our own little motivation cheer that we give each other, that we give, you know, sort of to the group. Let's go storm another castle.
And I feel like from this point on, these segments are going to end with Billy Crystal saying, have fun storming the castle. Yes. Aaron,
that's it.
Nicole, Kristen, thank you all very, very much. Have a great start to the week.
Thanks so much.
Pat. All right. I'll see you all later. Terry Bell, news director from Civic Media, is coming up next with three things you need to know to get your week started. We'll be back. This is Up North News Radio for a Monday. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell is with us now. How's your holiday weekend?
It was very quiet, low-key. I got to work a couple of baseball games. So that's my kind of Easter.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were doing that. Okay.
A lot of fun. Public address announcing. It's a lot of fun.
That is something, you think, for all the different things we do in broadcasting, you know, radio and TV, and I've been an MC of a million things, but I don't think public address announcing. My one foray into public address announcing was an utter failure. I was in sixth grade
the time. Oh, no.
And what's one of the first things we learn in broadcasting is about, you know, proper distance from the microphone and, you know, proper volume and projection. And yet, for whatever reason, even though they kept telling me over and over, you know, that I didn't have to do what I was doing, I'd keep going as the person who got to announce the bus arrivals. I'd be like, bus 14 is here, bus 14. Of course, in a much higher tone of voice because I was 11 years old at the time.
Yep.
And they eventually replaced me with somebody who could follow instructions. But somehow I rebounded.
Over-modulated. Yeah, look at you now. See?
Yeah, so over-modulation. I've never been accused of that. So each week, Terry helps us identify three things that we need to know to start the week, things that either have been in the news or are about to be, and you should be aware of them coming into the week. Where would you like to start?
Well, we'll start on a very serious note and a sad one, too, and that is the incident up in northwest Wisconsin near Cameron on Saturday afternoon. Three people dead, including two police officers, after a traffic stop that devolved into a shootout, unfortunately. And we're just finding out more about that. The authorities really have not said anything other than to issue press releases. We do know the name of one of the police officers involved, and that's because her family and friends have been speaking to the media. Her name was Officer Emily Breidenbach. She was a Chautauqua police officer. That much we know. We know that authorities do plan to have a press conference today, and maybe we'll find out more about what happened. The thing is, you know, the three principals in this situation are all deceased now, so we don't know exactly what happened. Maybe dash cam footage will reveal something, but clearly, you know, it just goes to speak to how dangerous police work is. You know, traffic stops are a routine part of the job. And even though you're prepared for the worst, and you almost have to expect it, every once in a while, the worst happens. And this clearly happened on Saturday afternoon.
And it's also worth reminding folks that I certainly saw on Twitter, I'm sure on Facebook or also other social media as well, a lot of speculation, a lot of information that I heard this, who heard this from somebody else. And I can understand people looking at us, at their radio, at their TV, at their computer screen and going, well, how come you're not mentioning this or that? And it's because it hasn't been confirmed.
Right.
And we don't need to be part of that parade of unintentional misinformation. So, you know, you can watch the speculation all you want, but we're going to bring you the the actual confirmed information as it comes in.
And that's what people misunderstand about the job we do, Pat, is that it's not our job just to relay everything we hear. We hear a lot of things that turn out not to be true over time. So what we try to do is vet the information as thoroughly as we can before we write or say anything. And that's an important part of the job.
That's right. All right. Where do you want to go with number two?
Well, there's a lot of talk. There was the big Supreme Court election last week, and now a lot of people are curious and speculating, looking ahead to the future. What's Wisconsin going to be like now after the election is over? One of the big things you can expect to happen once Janet Protasiewicz is sworn in and there is a 4-3 liberal majority on the court is that gerrymandering, those states' political maps, will come before the court. In fact, there's a progressive law firm, Law Forward, which already plans to, just about as soon as this new court is seated, will bring a case challenging Wisconsin's political maps. And this is something a lot of people feel needs to happen to bring fairness to Wisconsin's political process, and we'll see what happens there. You shared with me a very interesting piece by Sam Wang, a professor at Princeton University, about
Sam Wang,
ungerrymandering.
We had him on at 6:30. We're going to talk more about it throughout the course of the week, of what he says about even though he's a data professor, he's with the Princeton Gerrymander Institute. And consequently talked some about the provisions in the Wisconsin Constitution that frankly should have been followed by now by the legislature and what could happen. And yet by the same token, while we're talking about making things more representative in the legislature, I think we're also faced with the notion that Republicans have a supermajority in the state Senate now and could even begin impeachment proceedings against officials. And it is a fair, maybe I'll make this tomorrow's question of the day. It's a very fair question to ask. Who will be impeached first, Governor Tony Evers or U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas? Because we learned on Friday all the ways that Clarence Thomas has accepted so much free stuff from a right-wing billionaire. And yet, will he face accountability? Or will Republicans cause political mischief with their supermajority in the state Senate? So there's definitely a lot to talk about in terms of post-election consequences. And our third thing here, Terry, is the Joint Finance Committee continues its roadshow about the state budget.
They'll be up in your neck of the woods this week, I believe, up in Eau Claire.
Yep, UW-Eau Claire tomorrow, right?
Very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were at the Waukesha Exposition Center last week, and the one thing on the minds of people who came out to testify last week in Waukesha was education. And overwhelmingly, what the people who got up to speak had to say is they want education funding protected. Governor Evers is proposing $2.6 billion in funding for schools, also a $270 million investment in student mental health. More than $1 billion for special education. Governor Evers also wants to raise the amount that school districts can collect from local taxpayers. And we've seen some appetite for this in recent years with the number of referendums which have passed around Wisconsin. People seem to recognize or believe very strongly that education needs more funding from Madison. There seems to be some appetite for that bipartisan in the legislature, but just to what extent now that the Republicans are rewriting the budget, we'll see just what comes out in the wash.
So again, that Joint Finance Committee hearing, public hearing, is tomorrow at the UW-Eau Claire Davy Center. That will, I was looking to see if there was I don't have a start time on that. I want to say something like 2 to 6. And then the next day, Wednesday, at the Wilderness Resort in Wisconsin Dells. And then the last one will be up in Minocqua on Wednesday, April 26th. Terry Bell, thanks so much. Oh, can't forget, Brewers managed to win 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals.
They're off to a great start. 7-2.
Yep, and the Bucks, they begin their playoffs Saturday against a still unknown 8th seed. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
Thank you, Pat.
And thank all of you for being here as well. We appreciate it so much being part of Up North News. Again, you can find what we do at upnorthnewswi.com. Follow us at Up North News WI on social media. And you can always give your feedback radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Enjoy your Monday. We'll see you tomorrow.